is going on, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting beside me, the fella that, well, he can dog paddle with the best of them, I suppose. Dog paddle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. I'm dry right now, but I wasn't dry all week. Man, it has been raining. And let me tell you a funny story. I was working on a home that was new construction, and I was measuring, if you will, the perimeter of the house. This is how we figure the square footage. So I have to measure the outside. This is on the first story. Of course, upstairs, you do it differently because, of course, I can't fly.
Yeah, allegedly.
But I was going around the perimeter, and because it had been raining really hard, it's pretty much water everywhere. And this is like dirty, muddy water.
So it's a new home, correct?
Yeah, brand new. Yeah, no one lives in it yet. In fact, there's no, I mean, it's sheetrocked and stuff, but there's no flooring in it yet or nothing. Yeah, everybody's still doing a lot of the wiring. Yeah, it's just dried in. And there's standing water all the way around it, around the foundation. So I know it's, I mean, so I brought boots appropriate. I have mud boots that go up to like my knees. And I kind of feel around because you can't see the bottom. It's not clear. I feel around and I feel the bottom of the ground. I'm like, oh, okay. It's about 10 inches deep. No big deal. Good to go. I'm working my way around, and about three quarters of the way around the house, I take a next step. But this time, I don't feel a bottom. And I go falling in, and I thought I was in Mel's hole for a second. But it was about 4 feet deep. So now I'm like up to my nipples.
You walked off in a ditch
muddy
line.
Water. Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Luckily, I was able to save my iPad and my camera, which I had in my hands. I threw it above my head like a Vietnam vet when he falls into the Mekong Delta. So I got out, but I was mad because now I'm like, dude, I am 35 miles from my house. I'm soaking wet and muddy. If I sit in my car, now my car's seat is going to be soaking wet and muddy. And so you're just one of those things. If somebody was around and they were laughing at me, I wouldn't even blame them. I'm like, yeah, I'm as stupid as stupid can get right now. Everybody has these moments. So don't pretend like you're too cool for school. Like you've never done nothing dumb. I'm just like, what am I doing? So I had to laugh. I'm like, what am I going to do?
It is funny.
So I dried myself off the best as possible. And then I thought, well, should I go back to the house and then get changed? And I have another pair of mud boots I could grab and go back up. I'm like, nah, man, I got a lot of stuff I got to get
done. Did you just wear them dry?
I just wore it the rest of the day.
Just wore it till it dried?
And when I got home, my feet looked like prunes. And I told my wife about it. She's like, what have you been doing? Because it looked like I've been just rolling around in the dirt.
Literally. Out of the blue, when you stepped off in there, it's just like magic.
Yeah, because I was like, what happened? But luckily, it was all pretty fresh runoff. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like it was like a bog or something sitting there for a while, so it's really...
It's just, yeah, just rain.
Didn't stink real bad like a stock pond.
That would have been hilarious,
too. But yeah, luckily there was no one around. It was early in the morning, and none of the job crews had got there yet. But also, it had been raining heavily, so they probably weren't coming at all anyways, because there's nothing for them to do.
Yeah.
So luckily there was no one within sight. So when I finally got done and got out, I was looking around. There wasn't anybody.
Just laughing to yourself as you're driving around.
I was mad for about, I'm not going to lie, I was mad for about a good 10 minutes. But then you're just like, well, being mad don't fix it. It's not like I'm going to get dry by being unmad, you know? So you're just going, things happen.
Like, yeah, just being silly.
What about you? What have you been up to?
Working around, like I said, working around the house, doing more stuff, replacing some more wood, just doing things and odds and ends, trying to get everything caught up. I said some friends asked me to come help them do some stuff, so I may go do that. I'm busier now than I've ever thought I would be. And so I don't even know. I want to go get a full-time job again just so I can have some time off, because my wife and my family and friends, I was laying floor this weekend helping a brother-in-law. So, I mean, it's been madness, literally, like you're talking about. And I know how busy you've been, and it's, I don't know. I'm glad everything's kind of getting back to normal for us around here, but geez, I need a break. But that's what we're doing here. We're bringing y'all a break. And speaking of bringing you a break, Mr. Filson's got a really interesting story to tell.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. This was sent in to us by one of our listeners. They wish to remain anonymous, but it's about a childhood memory that they and a friend had, and they both recall it, but no one else in their family knows what they're talking about.
Now, that's weird.
So we don't know if this is like a time slip or parallel dimension. Check this out. It says, hello. I'm not sure how this story would be classified, but it definitely falls within the parameters of the strange. My oldest friend and I have known each other since we were neighbors back in Denver, Colorado, and we met when we were both 4 years old. We are now in our 50s and have shared a memory that our families should also have, but they don't. We have discussed this on numerous occasions, and neither of us just gave all the details to the other person, but rather shared them in a number of conversations. We both remember distinctly that my friend's dad built a yellow roller coaster in their backyard. That's right. Yes, a roller coaster. It was small, like for little kids, and yellow, and made almost entirely from wood, with metal fasteners as needed. We both know that it wasn't always in their yard, but built during the summer when we were around 6 or 7 years old, and it was there for a few summers. My friend's dad was a talented woodworker and also built a small treehouse in the yard that remained there for many years. Everyone remembers the treehouse, but no one except my friend and I remembers the roller coaster. We both had siblings who were around all the time, but we didn't really hang out with our siblings, mostly just each other. We both have asked our parents, who also have remained friends, on several occasions, and they and our siblings have no recollection of any roller coaster. Both my friend and I are highly intelligent and have IQs in the mid-130s. Neither of us have ever shared any stories besides this one. That is entirely strange and seems almost like it didn't happen, according to everyone else, that is. We have discussed the possibility that we both live or lived in parallel lives, in a parallel reality, like there are other versions of ourselves, and maybe they experienced the yellow roller coaster, and we were somehow given a shared memory from our parallel selves. Who knows what this phenomenon is, but I can swear to anyone who is listening to this, we experienced what we recall. The yellow roller coaster was real. Love you guys. Thanks for all you do.
Wow. That's almost like, was it the Mandela effect?
I'm not sure, but I know what you're talking about. It's like a ripple in time. It's strange that they both remember it and they can distinctly, but no one else in their family does. They're like, no, man, I don't remember that. And it's such an odd thing. You would remember a yellow roller coaster hand built by.
And the detail. It's. Yeah, dude, that's wild. Have you ever, have you ever had that happen to where like you remember something with your family, but none of them do?
No, but I definitely have things I've had memories and then it probably wasn't right. Cause they talk about human memory isn't the greatest, but that was just, it's something that I remember, right? Yeah, this is two people.
Yeah, exactly.
Remembering the same thing.
Well, and it's one of those deals, like I've had memories too, but you later on, after you try to break them down, you realize it may be two or three that have kind of rolled into one, right? They've bled over. Like you think about vacations. If you go to vacations to the same spot enough times, you'll have memories that you can't really remember which visit you did that on. So it almost feels like one vacation to Colorado, you could put like four memories into, right?
Yeah, I've had.
But a yellow roller coaster is not one of those memories.
I've even had moments where I thought of remembering something, and then after a few minutes, I remembered that that wasn't real, that I'm remembering a dream.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or I've heard other people like give stories or details about something, and then I'll be like, dude, you saw that in a movie.
Yeah.
It sounds exactly like this movie I saw. You don't want to call him out. You want to be rude. But I'm like, is this guy lying? Or is he just falsely remembering that that's from a movie, not his actual childhood?
Well, like you remember being like a group of us, like a group of friends, and you'll remember something, and somebody will add something to it, and you're like, dude, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, oh, that happens a lot.
All the time. You're like, man, I forgot. But two people having the same memory in the family and all the detail and nobody else remembering it almost seems like it's an implanted memory from a possible, I don't know, an encounter with something maybe. I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, that's almost like what would be ideal is unless you somehow slipped over into another dimension and the two people you replaced slipped over into your dimension. It's almost an implanted memory.
Maybe we are, though, moving back and forth through different versions of reality at the same time. So seamlessly, we're not even aware that it's happening. That's why people see Sasquatch or something else.
Yeah,
for that encounter you were in a similar universe, but not the same one. I don't know.
Well, I have a universe you're not going to want to be in. Now, you remember a while back we received the tale about the, I guess it's more like a pale crawler, but it was something along the emaciated line that the military fellas had run across, and he had seen it outside the wire. Well, listen to this. This happened to a National Guardsman stationed at Fort McCoy, Wisconsin. And it says, I want to share an experience I had while training with my National Guard unit at Fort McCoy, Wisconsin. I moved from enlisted to officer via ROTC and was attached to a unit in my prospective MOS while in the program. I don't really want to give specifics on my service as the community is small enough to identify me to peers. But in 2014, my platoon decided to conduct nighttime land navigation at Fort McCoy. From 2030 to 030, right?
Mm-hmm.
So while the Army is typically all about buddy pairs, night land navigation is one of the few cases where we can do things solo if we choose. Having done night land nav plenty before, I step off alone. I have a compass, a map, and my headlamp ready to rock. And for those of you that don't know, land navigation involves seeking out markers on a course by plotting their coordinates on a map and moving there via terrain reference and compass. At night, this is typically done without light as much as possible. When light is used, it is red. This minimizes damage to night vision. Says these methods also keep you concealed in a tactical environment when employed without noise discipline. With the noise discipline. I bring this up so you can understand a few things about my circumstance. I was moving through the woods while making a token effort to be hard to spot and hear. The woodland I was in was part of a larger forest system, but was frequently traveled, and that night we had some 15 soldiers stomping around in it. Now, my illumination was a toggleable headlamp, but it was turned to be red when switched on. To cycle to white light, I have to turn it off twice. The cycle was off solid white, off solid red, off flashing red, off solid white. So, my assigned points will take me to the other side of the course and back. A good hour and a half of walking as the crow flies. There are more or less in a straight line, so I estimate 2.5 hours out and back. And I know if I come back too early, I might be given another set of points, so I resolve to walk out. So I take a break for an hour, and then I mosey on back. Now, the first half of this goes as planned. I get my points without much trouble and wind up sitting on a hillside at around 10 at night. It's cloudy, but the moon's full. I can see well when the sky is clear and poorly, of course, when it's not. And occasionally, I see a red light bobbing in the distance below me. Once a pair of platoon members pass down the hill from me, using white light to try to read their map, I startle them when I ask if they need help. And at the end of my break, there's no more motion in my area. Most people had likely walked out and back, and they were too lost or took the hand railing home. So I guess there's a road out there that they talk about that you can make sure that you can get to and just go home if you get lost. Says, I'm feeling pretty at one with my surroundings, having sat in the same spot, eating stale Skittles for a long good while. Owls are hooting and trees are swaying and all is well. So I trot down my hill and step through some brush. Now I'm in a clearing where the prairie intersects the forest. There's some dead trees in this area, and one of them is split halfway up. At the top, around 15 feet or so, I can make out a head and shoulders silhouette against the clouds backlit by the moon. Now I walk up to it and ask how they got up there and if they're stuck, when the shadow twitches and I get the impression it's turned toward me. I stand there looking at it, and it's maybe looking at me. Now all of a sudden this situation feels off. But I'm not going to let my battle buddy punk me out like this, so I ask if they need a hand. Mid-sentence, the moonlight comes back. It's clear that this thing on the tall stump, well, it's not a soldier. This moonlight glimpse is the best look I get at this thing. It looks like a stretched-out bald person. Its long arms are clutching the stump. I can't make out the face, but it looks pinched. By that, I mean I could see its eyes, or I couldn't see its eyes or mouth, like they were small and in the middle of the head. It's skinny like it hasn't eaten, but it's tall and obviously strong to have made such a vertical climb. It was definitely facing me. Now, it's probably was maybe the whole time that I was in the clearing, like maybe it was watching me since I came down the hill. I'm thinking that my speech might have startled it, and I was swearing loudly as it rapidly scurries down the trunk. I flick on my red light, and I catch it on all fours moving toward the brush line in the direction I'm heading. Automatically, I keep toggling my headlamp to bring it to white light. That means it goes off, then to flashing red. And in the flash, I see the thing at the wood line, but I think it's flipped around and is backing in, probably to keep eyes on me. And then a few seconds that it takes for me to get to the white light, well, this thing is gone. Now I scan the tree line, which is silent. And when it moved there, there was a scraping noise. Plus, the woodland brush is very dense. If it was still running, I would hear it. I reason that it must have stopped and that it must be watching me. I fumble out my knife and I keep looking around the woods in front of me. After ages, I start inching along a perpendicular path to my initial route of travel. An angle that will link me up with the hardball road that runs up and down the side of our course. Once in the road, I can take it back to where my platoon is parked. Now, my major problem is that the road is 10 minutes of walking away from my current position, mostly woodland. That can't be helped, and I have to get out of the clearing first. My progress on that front is painfully slow. I'm fighting my natural urge to freeze in place like a deer in the headlights. After sidestepping a good 10 meters, I hear a corresponding rustling, and I think I see movement. It's enough to get me to turn and bolt right into a downed log, which trips me. I scramble up to my feet and I look back to the wood line where this is an audible commotion. I glimpse a leg and an ass moving back into the woods. At this point, well, I'm done with the whole situation, but I don't want to run again. I start power walking to the road, turning to look as much as I can while seeing what this thing is doing. Over the movement of my own kit, I can hear it moving alongside me parallel. As I near the end of the clearing, I think it might be picking up pace as if to cut me off. I make the decision to sprint, and when I enter the woods, my path is clear, but I think I can hear it in my periphery. I don't stop and run hard until I hit the paved road. I bite it hard a few times along the way, but recover with a frantic speed that I cannot consciously replicate. Once in the road, I run perpendicular to the forest until I don't think I hear it anymore. I'm winded from my breakout run. From the middle of the road, I have good visibility and I decide to walk to catch my breath. And this time it's quiet for a while. Then I hear a branch move around 30 feet in the air from the woods I had just fled. I snap my gaze up and see a pale, ovular face, half in shadow, peeking at me from around a trunk. I take off again. After way too long, I make it back to the headlights of our LMTVs. It's 12:15. What happened, cadet? You get lost out there? You're covered in mud. Did you fall down? Why are you so out of breath? Well, I got lost on my way back. I knew better than to claim I saw a monster. Already my reaction had left me feeling foolish. In the years since drilling at FMC, I have never experienced anything like that again. McCoy does not have a history of disappearances, and as far as I know, neither do the two closest towns of Sparta or Toma. I've done Nightland Nav alone a few times since without any issue. This is less from courage and more from me deciding I must have misinterpreted a situation. Maybe the world is weirder than I thought. This thing followed him.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy. It reminds me of like Gollum.
Yes. What is it about these? Look, none of these things seem to be very friendly, or maybe are they misinterpreting them? And maybe they, is it a type of fae? But they seem to be evil.
Yeah. I'm not down with that.
No, I'm not down with that either. And there's something that I don't think anybody's down with, but we're going to be discussing. And that's Centaur sightings, folks. We're going to be discussing the actual sightings that have taken place. I'm in North America. Of centaur beings. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, y'all.
Oh man, here we go. Okay. A little quick behind the scenes. I'm recording this. I guess you could either be late at night / early in the morning, right? It's before daylight, of course. But it's after midnight, of course. So it's in a creepy time, right? And sometimes I choose to do this. Some of these other shows that I've done throughout the years, I think Kyle does it some too. I kind of wait and set the mood, right? You kind of get a little creepy. You kind of try to get into that feel. And this is one of those subject matters that I kind of wanted to be creepy for me to tell these stories. But another thing was this. I don't know why certain animals or certain cryptids or, I mean, creatures, if you will, some are more believable, right? Why? Why is it that we can believe that there is a giant prehistoric monkey or, you know, ape man or devolved human or something, but we can't believe like in a goat man? You can't believe that that's real. Can't believe in a dog man. Now you sound crazy, but we've kind of normalized Bigfoot, right? Like that's kind of what we've come down to. And I feel that this is one of those things. And, you know, you've seen the thing. You know what I'm talking about. We're talking about centaurs. And it feels, you just want to laugh. The minute you tell that story and you say this is what we're going to be talking about, you're like, there's no way. Right? Like, that's the jumping off point, right? We've talked about it before. This is where you get off. This is like, I'm not buying this, Cam. There's no more. Look, I'm the same way. But I don't know how to... I guess you can't. You can't minimize someone's story, right? You can't minimize their experience. You can't brush it off because you didn't have it. It's hard, and it's hard not to. It's really hard to be like, whatever they saw, they were wrong. And you can't. You can't do that with any walk of life, with any individual. And I say all that because these stories are terrifying, but they also don't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So when I bring up the word chimera, lots of things pop into your mind, right? There's genetic chimera, and of course there's the chimera in mythology. When you talk about genetics, it almost kind of goes hand in hand, if you will, with the mythology. But to break it down, it's a single organism composed of cells with more than one distinct genotype. To give you a breakdown idea of that, back in the 50s, in a British medical journal, they had actually done this, like mid-50s, had done a study on a woman who had two different blood types. And apparently they broke down the fact that this resulted in her twin brother's cells were living in her body. And you go back to 1996, which to me doesn't sound like that long ago, but to some, it was a while back, right? But in 96, they even did that. And they found that this blood group type of chimerism isn't as rare as you would think. And, you know, now what we know about DNA, we know these things. We know so much more about that. What we don't know so much more about is the mythology side of chimera. So if you look up the idea of in Greek mythology, what it would be, is most of the time it's a lion. Like you'll see them painted, right? Lions were used throughout these times, but lions, right? And in the middle of its body looks like a goat head sticking up out of its back. And then lots of times the snake on it, because there has to be a snake, right? It's the tail. There is some sort of reptilian tail or, you know, or some, who knows what they've done with this. And what's funny is lots of times in some of the older paintings I've seen, it looks like a regular lion's tail, but they put a snake head on the end of it, which is insane too, correct? So you take these ideas, and that's the ideas that we're all pretty much stuck with when you think of Greek mythology. You think of these outlandish things, and when you think of centaurs, I think of these outlandish things. And then I found some stuff and started digging more into it, really, and looking at it. And I had been approached and messaged by several listeners who had talked about this, and one of them has even talked about having a story, and I hope she'll send it in. But so you start digging, like anything else, right? We start digging, and you start looking into crazy like niches of how long ago they were written. And when I say that, I'm talking about like back in what seems to be like 34-35 AD. Right? Yeah. So there was a Greek writer. There was a writer that was born in Southwest Turkey, lived to around, they say, 137 AD, named Phlegon. And Phlegon of Trellis. And Phlegon was a person that loved to document stories. But not just stories, those that kind of revolve around what we like to cover, strange and unusual. And, of course, put them down as fact. This is what happened. This is what everyone was talking about. This is what everyone was experiencing. So in part of these writings, this is, like I said, back in 34 to 35 A.D., there is something written that Phlegon wrote, and I'm going to read it to you. It says, a centaur was discovered near Sani in the city of Arabia on a high mountain that is full of deadly poisons. The drug has the same name as the city, and as a killing substance, it is fast working and effective. The centaur was taken alive by the king, who sent it to Egypt with other gifts for the emperor Claudius. It ate meat, but it did not like the change of air and died. And so the prefect of Egypt had it embalmed and then sent on to Rome. At first it was shown in the palace. Its face was more savage than a human's face. Its arms and its fingers were hairy, and its ribs were joined to its front legs and its stomach. It had strong hooves of a horse, and its mane was tawny. However, because of the embalming process, its mane and its skin had become dark. In terms of its size, it was not as usually shown, but it was not much smaller either. It is said that there were other centaurs in the aforementioned city of Sani. As to the one sent to Rome, the skeptic can go and examine it for himself, for, as noted above, it has been embalmed and it is kept in the emperor's storehouse. So he goes on, Phlegon goes on to say, not only is it real, yo, we got one of them soaked in honey and you can go take a look at it. Which storing stuff in honey is awesome, right? I mean, everybody knows history of honey. It's just awesome. But the idea that so let's say, what if there was one? And through all these years, it's become lost, destroyed in war, it's gone, whatever. But could you imagine unearthing something now in Egypt or unearthing something in Rome? Or let's just say there's a big vault that you like to just put this in your mind. There is a giant vault, kind of like that one that Abe Sapien is in Hellboy, but it's full of honey and it's underneath the Vatican and it's got a life-size centaur in it. Because with that idea, around 77 to 79 AD, in the book called Natural History, along comes Pliny the Elder. And he writes that Claudius Caesar writes that a centaur was born in Thessaly and died the same day. And in his reign, we actually saw one that was brought here from Egypt, preserved in honey. One case is that of an infant at Saguntum, which at once went back into the womb in the year in which the city was destroyed by Hannibal. So now we have a backup story of, yeah, I saw the thing after it got here, which is insane. Now there's another writing, and this writing comes from Latin centaurs, or in the Greeks called them like kentaurs, or it was something crazy, right? But undoubtedly there was a group of people in Thessaly that were very experienced horsemen and were in battle. That's all they rode. They all rode horses. And that over the time, much like the stories that were believed, you know, in South America and with Cortez return, when you see the men on the horses and that people have never really seen horses or been around horses. And now the stories over the years, they claim, were transformed into, in fact, that these men weren't great warriors. In fact, they were half horse, half man. And, you know, it's always like they moved as one. You hear all the stories. So some believe that the centaur that they're talking about was nothing more than maybe a warrior. Maybe it was, you know, looked a little different. Maybe it was a horse with a deformity. There's all these tales. But then you start reading the ones written by Pliny and Flegon, and you start going, well, wait a second. What if? Well, then you start looking like, hold on. Now they're seeing them in North America, which they should not be, correct? I mean, we think of Greek history. We think of what we know, and you don't ever been told of centaurs in North America. Here's what's wild. There is really no, and if there is, and some of you know, please forward it to me, but there's really no nailed down, I guess you could say, symbolism in Native American folklore for a centaur. But there are stories of the Native Americans just as recently as the 80s talking about it. There was a story that came up that took place on an Apache Indian reservation that a person reported seeing one looking into the window of a church, and that it was 8 foot tall. It was dark red with horns, and it had arms and the body, but it also had four legs, four hooved legs. And this goes back. Apparently there were sightings reported for a while now on the Four Corners Reservation, the Navajo Reservation. They had reported it, and that shaman in this area believe that it shows up when there is a problem in the community or in the group there, which is strange because it's not really in their folklore, right? We've not really seen anything other than now. You say really in their folklore there. I don't know of a centaur, at least not the wording, but it could be easily something could be done as like a skinwalker. You think of a skinwalker could take on that shape. Maybe it's in between morphs. Who really knows? But the North American ideas of centaur was fascinating. So you go to looking around and get a load of this from South Carolina. I never told this story to anybody but my daughter, because I knew nobody would believe me. Hell, I don't even believe it. I worked at a video store back in the early 90s in South Carolina, and this couple came up to the counter to pay for their movies. They were talking, and the girl was saying, I know what I saw, and it was a centaur. And I was like, excuse me? And her friend said, you must have been drinking something or taking drugs. And after they left, I was thinking the exact same thing, that girl was on something, because there's no such thing as a centaur. Well, fast forward a few months, my boyfriend and I were going to the racetrack about an hour away from our town. We were making small talk, and I looked over to the side of the road. Now, the road we were on is known for deer, and I was, of course, looking out for deer. Well, as I continued to look, I saw a man on a horse. But as we got closer, well, it wasn't a man on a horse. It was a man as part of the horse. I turned to my boyfriend and I asked him, did you see that? He didn't, and I was not going to tell him what I saw because, well, he didn't believe in that sort of thing at all. And so I just wondered at this moment, and have ever since, that if the girl I saw in the video store was right, and that maybe she had seen the exact same one. Which is wild, because the idea of the random small talk, right? You just catch something. You're like, what's going on? First of all, you know, your friend's giving you a hard time. You've told him what you've seen. We all know how that goes. And you overhear the conversation only to have the same experience. We're either in the Matrix or that is a very, very odd thing. And as far as Native Americans go, I found some more from another Apache reservation. Goes on from a person named Major. Major says that when my father's friend was younger, he was a deputy for the Apache Reservation Police. Now, this all happened in the early 1980s, and one night, while he was on patrol in his squad car all by himself on the reservation, he was driving along this deserted highway that passed right through town. And when he reached the church, he saw something moving back and forth along the church. Already, folks, again, peering into the windows. Now, he stopped the car on the highway, and then he just watched for a little while. Said it was too dark to make out at first, and then this dark shape took notice of him and began moving out of the shadows and around into the front of the church. Now, I forget exactly whether he then moved the police car into the parking lot to intercept this man, or if he stopped the car shortly after making the move. But either way, The headlights helped illuminate what he had seen. Under the orange light of the streetlights was an 8-foot-tall demon centaur. The bottom half was indeed a dark-haired horse, while where the neck and head should have been was the upper torso of a man. Now the man was staring right at him as it strolled by, all four hooves clicking on the pavement. His skin was a dark red, and he said it had horns on either side of its head. And he said that they were like ram horns, curled around on either side of the skull. Now this officer was terrified. And while the thought of shooting the beast crossed his mind, he reasoned against it. He didn't want to provoke it and have, of course, it attack him. It completed crossing the road and down a steep slope into a farmland field below. And once it reached this open ground, he watched as it started to run away as fast as possible until it disappeared into the darkness and the trees beyond. He was deeply troubled after this encounter and couldn't reason why a demonic creature would be looking into a building as holy as a church. And the way he told this story, you just couldn't help but believe it to be true. And I'm so sure that this actually happened. Now, I've had some very strange encounters myself, and a lot of them are secondhand stories from friends and family on the Navajo and the Apache reservations. But I can tell you this, you shouldn't talk about many of these, because being a Native American, we believe that talking about these weird things can have very negative repercussions to all those involved. And I'm not so sure Major's not onto something there. That maybe there is, but a demonic, again, another story of it peering in windows, a giant, demonic-looking, horned centaur peering in windows. Now, of course, our friends, Miss Linda Godfrey, she's always got some great stuff, right? So Linda actually reported on this. It says this incident happened around 1970 in Arizona between Sierra Vista and Benson. As two young men drove along Highway 90, they were forced to stop when their car's engine suddenly stalled, and they got out, of course, to take a look. Now, they couldn't figure out what was wrong, so they get back in where they were sitting, and then they heard the sound of hooves running right at them. Now, they turned to look out the rear mirror, or I'm sorry, the rear window, and there they saw it. Half man, half horse creature. And it reared up and started smashing in the back of the car with its front hooves. Now, there were no mention of separate arms, so I'm not sure about that point. His friend began screaming, and rightfully so, to get the hell out of there. And the driver's frantic efforts to restart the engine somehow, of course it always does, worked, and of course, they got away. Now, the driver told his parents when he'd finally reached home, and he recalled that his mother said, "What were you doing that caused the devil to show you that demon?" And one family member added that they remembered that the back of the car was deeply dented all over as if someone had been banging on it with rocks. So now you've got another, of course it's strange, they seem a report of more of an evil centaur idea. Now, I do know throughout history that they were supposed to be kind of, I guess, over the top, right? They were like really lustrous. Is that a word? Lustrous? They they were very lusty. They loved the ladies, right? They loved the fellas. They loved everybody. And that the centaurs, like, they lived life to the fullest, right? I mean, they loved the sugar, the wine, the love, the smoke, the party, the dance. They were all about it, right? I mean, centaur party life is the way it goes down. So why they're so mad, I guess it's the same thing. They are must be extremely emotional creatures. But what are we talking about here? Again, they bring up, it's got hooves, but it's got the body of a man. Now, the strange thing is they didn't report the other arms on it. But Linda's got another report here that says from a woman whose coworker had urged her to report this after she told him about an encounter that her and a friend and their siblings had as children. This encounter took place on the outskirts of southern Richmond, Virginia, back in 1966, when this woman was 8 years old. And now, of course, she's a former IRS employee. And this is what they say. It says, I remember the sighting vividly. She and her friend, along with a few younger siblings, snuck out one evening to play in a nearby four-acre park and rec area. It's on a summer night right at sunset, right? She goes on to say that there was a creek that ran through this area, and the group of them, and it just followed this little path from their apartment buildings through a tree line, and then it dumped out into the play area. Just like kids will do, correct? Well, the children had been there a short time when they heard a familiar sound that the woman described as being between a movie-style ghost-like moan and the whinny of a horse. Well, they'd often heard the same thing from inside their apartment. Now, the lady's parents had always tried to blame it on a nearby trucking company, but the trucks were most active in the daytime, she said, and the weird moan was only heard at dusk and at night. Well, she looked around and she saw a tall, dark figure watching her from about a block away. She said it looked human from the top of its head to the bottom of its torso, but the rest, well, the rest of it resembled the bottom part of a horse. Horse's legs, hooves, tail, butt, everything, the whole thing. It was too dark to see its face, but there were no ears, and the head area looked, well, much more hairy and shaggy than the smoothly furred remainder horse body. But she says that she knew at once that no human could imitate the thin legs with hooves. This was not someone dressed in a costume, she says. This thing was real. It was a creature, and it was alive. And as soon as the beast noticed that she was watching it, it began to run toward her, the human-like arm or limbs being held in a bent position with elbows slightly to the side. Well, she screamed, grabbed her four-year-old brother, and the whole group began running from the tree line or for the tree line with this creature right on their heels. It sounded like the beat of horse hooves, even on grass, she said. Well, when they reached the tree line that marked the edge of the park, she turned around to see where the creature was, and it had stopped too, about half a block away. Its rear end and haunches partially turned as the torso and head twisted to watch her. She estimated it stood 7 to maybe 8 feet tall. Now the small group of kids began beating a hurried path back to their house. Now their parents naturally didn't believe them, but she says her friend and brother still talk about it with her to this day. She added that she was not one to believe in ghosts and had never had any other weird paranormal incidences. Now, that is disturbing as hell for the fact, imagine how hard you would run. Ooh, being chased by a centaur, good Lord. So when we've got one that took place in Michigan in the, let's see, nighttime, 2006, February, between Battle Creek and Bellevue, a woman was driving along on a road between both towns and had slowed down for a stop sign when she says that suddenly this creature of a very large size jumped up over a snowbank and ran 10 yards a second, she guessed, and it was coming towards her car. She goes on to describe it as enormous and its body as white as the snow around it. It had a tiny little legs and like goat legs, but small. She had the impression that parts of it were like a man and other parts of it were like an animal. And according to her, it either grabbed or reached to grab the door handle, but the car was locked, thankfully. Now, she said its fingers were long. She said incredibly long, and so were the nails. And it was incredibly fast, but she never reported seeing a face. Now, she did mention that another car of people had also seen it, and that they had stopped and was looking at it at one point. So, how would you fake that? How would you fake some kind of animal body? Because, like we all know, unless you elongate the legs, your legs are basically only going to get bigger no matter what costume you put on them, right?
That's just the way it works, correct? So if you've got super, super thin legs, well, how? How are you controlling that? Like, how have you built it? It's funny because nobody tries to make a costume to go smaller. Everybody wants to be taller and bigger and super huge. And it's because you can't. I can't design a costume to be 3 foot tall. You're just not going to pack it in there, right? Although that's what I look like when I wear like a medium shirt. Is like 10 pounds of mud in a 5 pound bag. Yeah. So when you look at the legs on this thing, as she's talking about, you're like, it's baby goat legs. So it's like instead of a centaur, what would it be? A foal? I mean, you've had like a baby centaur. So leave it up, of course, now to Florida. Florida man, leave it all of this stuff. This took place in Melbourne, Florida. It says three friends and I saw an apparition, possibly of a demon. Right? Possibly of a demon. Now listen to this. This is kind of say. This may go back into the church ideas with the church demon. It says, myself, another boy, and his two sisters were riding our bikes together down a sidewalk that ran along the outskirts of our neighborhood. The end of that sidewalk is at the Beachside Highway in Melbourne, Florida. Nearing the highway, with me leading the pack, the boy put his hand on my shoulder and made me stop pedaling. When I looked back at him, both girls were staring straight ahead with tears in their eyes, and the boy pointed for me to look. Not knowing what they could be pointing at because I had just been looking that direction when they stopped me, I looked back and saw what I can only say was a centaur on the sidewalk in between us and the highway. The sun had just risen above the horizon and was at the creature's back, so the whole figure was cast in shadow, but I could make it out that it had a very muscular arms, torso, the torso speaking was reddish, and horse's four legs, and that this thing was over 6 foot tall. Now next to it was a thicket of palmetto and palm trees from which a person could have jumped out in a clever costume, although the quickness of appearance and the incredible detail of the creature would make me doubt that was possible. Needless to say, my first move was to turn around and jet, and the others had already done so. Before we pedaled around the corner, I looked and it was still standing there, and I was very relieved that it was not chasing us. Well, after we had reached a safe distance, we celebrated our escape. Now, unfortunately, I've lost touch with my friends, and when I moved away that year, that was it. When I came back at the age of 15, I lived right by that sidewalk again, and one night from my room, I heard frantic yelling by the road and came out to discover that a kid had been struck by a car crossing from the beach over to the sidewalk right where I had seen that centaur. The family was much too shaken up for me to talk with them, and the boy had been killed sadly. So I won't know if he saw something, but it is a very odd coincidence if that's what it is. I've just started trying to reconnect my friends to see if they saw the same creature as I did, or if we all saw our own version of what we thought the devil looked like. As we didn't discuss it in detail at the time, we were just getting out of there. And I love how they leave the detail of a possible devil, another demon idea, that maybe these centaur aren't as nice as, you know, maybe they were made out to be or most things are portrayed, that maybe these things really are evil. Evil centaurs seen in North America. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, but just so you know, they say that people born between November 23rd and December 21st, which is me and is Lil Fizzy and is my son, all bear the sign of Sagittarius the Centaur. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Back with a little centaur chatter.
Yeah.
Can you believe that there's so... Look, like I discussed, I'm shocked that these things are... There's real sightings of them.
I know, right? So this is, again, the story of centaurs. were people, were they once an actual race that roamed around on the planet just like giants and things? And that's why it made its way into folklore and legends and myths? Or is it the idea of reading these mythology and things like this, these legends, that, like, once again, it's like thought form projection? So many people on planet Earth know what a centaur is. And by thinking about it, it's actually manifested itself.
Well, it seems like that's what's happened with everything. Everything that keeps coming forward. If you can think of something strange like that, there's been sightings of it. Now, whether or not these sightings are all 100% legit, there's no way of knowing, right? But there's, like we've said before, there's no way of knowing if any sighting is 100% legit unless you yourself had it.
There's no way of knowing if it's going to rain next week. No. I mean, like, you don't know. And also, there's theories are so crazy. Like, I've heard theories from its extraterrestrial experimentation. Mm-hmm. Like, they're trying to make a half man, half horse, and they did a lot of this stuff back in the day. I've heard the same thing where it's not aliens. It's secret governments trying to merge humans, human-animal hybrids, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you could create an army of super soldiers that were half chimpanzee, humanzees.
The humanzees,
I mean, it would be really tough to fight. If you could create a man that was half dolphin, he could be really good at swimming. And I mean,
there's a lot of these crazy chimera experiments that they've talked about. But just the idea of a centaur, like, why would you create that? There's so many other things. Like, if you're going to create a half man, half something, the man's the weakest point. Like, don't add man to it. That's why I think the robot deal. So it just seems like it's more of a thought manifestation.
The first time I ever heard about a centaur sighting was actually when we spoke to Nathan Couch. Remember, he wrote the book, Goat Man and Folklore, whatever. He was talking about that guy that was like bow hunting.
Yep.
Like in Maryland or somewhere, and he saw a centaur.
And then he's also talked about dudes that were bow hunting that saw a goat man.
Yeah, similar thing.
I mean, you're talking about, you see all these things, you're like, this is madness. But where would that hide? But let's be honest, how would you track a centaur? It looks like horse tracks, right?
yeah, good point.
I guess it would be, is he unshod? I mean, I don't know. Do you have to go get, a horseshoe, or got to get a farrier come out? Take care of your centaur?
For some reason,
that's like trimming your toenails.
I feel like they're really good at archery and also like playing flutes. Does that make sense?
Zanfear, master of the pan flute.
That's what I think of when I think of a centaur. I'm thinking, man, I bet that thing's really good with a bow. And then I'm like, man, I bet it could play a wicked song with a flute.
Right? They have beautiful hair.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy to know that there's a lot of those sightings out there. And I've got some more stuff I'm going to be discussing, some more haunted campgrounds from around the world and from a few different spots. So, yeah, I've got some other things coming up on Elite that's going to be rather disturbing as well.
That sounds like fun. Don't forget, folks, if you're only listening to Expanded Perspectives and you'd like to hear more, we do offer Elite. You have to go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, click on the Elite tab, or you can just go to expandedperspectives.com/elite/ signing up. It's easy, $5 a month. You get our entire back catalog as well as new extra content every month. Also, you know, by doing that, you're actually helping the show, where it helps us create more content. We constantly need to scour the interwebs trying to find things. And sometimes you have to, you know, purchase books and things like that.
Yep.
That's the only way we get the information, so that we're able to relay it to you, and it just helps us out. Also, if you really want to help out the show, please go and rate us and write us a review on iTunes or any of the podcatchers you listen to. That does help us.
Yep.
Go over to YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel over there.
We got some new unusual encounters coming out.
We do.
I've got a very, very interesting one dealing with a black-eyed kid that's going to be coming out next. Yeah.
That is cool. I know that when you did the Pale Crawlers, as well as the Wolves Among Us we did with more upright standing canines, I got a bunch of new emails from sightings that people have had. So if you want to share your story, go to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. And you can call the show, 888-393-2783.
If you've got a centaur sighting, shoot it this way.
Absolutely. That would be awesome. If you want to remain anonymous, just say that, or just make up a pseudonym.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy. Just say your name's Bob and it's not.
Jean-Claude.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, yeah.
Jean-Claude.
Really cool.
Yeah, come up with a cool pseudonym. Except don't tell us it's a pseudonym. Just tell us it's that name. We'll just be like, that dude's got a cool name.
Right. All right, folks. So that's all the time we have for this episode. For you Elite folks, we'll be talking to you later. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.